The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I should be writing number 395 for the week of March 26th.
Well, I should be writing. I should be working on my craft. I should be writing. I should be submitting my next draft. But I'm sitting home watching the doctor.
Hi there. Welcome to I Should Be Writing, the podcast for wannabe fiction writers. I'm your host, Mer Lafferty. And it's funny, I'm recording this directly after last week's, because I knew what I was going to record about and I had time. And of course, after I recorded last week's, I took a break and then procrastinated starting to record this. So, as I said last week, my new epiphany about procrastination still needs some work. Or rather, the epiphany is still there, but the actual going through with it needs work. But it has been forever since I have done a feedback show. And I think it's because the feedback comes in kind of at a trickle. And I want to wait till I have a good number before I do a show. And then suddenly I realize I haven't answered questions since July. So I apologize. Actually, while I'm pulling up these emails, I want to ask you a question. What do you think I should do for episode 400? I realize that's coming up very shortly if I maintain my weekly posting, which I hope to do. It's going to come up in 5 weeks. What should I do for episode 400? I don't know. Should I try to get somebody famous on? Should I do a retrospective? Should I look up what retrospective actually means? Because I'm not entirely sure. I think it means looking back on work you've done before, but I'm not sure. My vocabulary is good. Back in July, Brendan asked, I've recently finished the final draft of a novel I've been working on for a long time. I realize I've made two fatal mistakes. It doesn't have a satisfying ending, and I have two protagonists that never intersect, and I don't plan on them intersecting until the second book. I know now that selling this would be nigh impossible. I understand that I need to resist the urge to spend 1,000 years rewriting it, but a part of me still wants to spend months querying, you know, to test the waters. Is that a silly waste of time? Well, number one, I don't know what you've been doing since July. Since you've gone ahead without my advice, I hope. Number two, I'm reminded of The Good Place, where one character's trying to figure out how to interact with another one, and he says, should I be nice to her? Should I throw her jewelry in the toilet? And the other one says, that's the opposite of being nice. So querying and editing it for 1,000 years, you have other options. See, the great thing here is that you know what's wrong with the book. Do you know how many people have a book they can't sell and they have no idea what's wrong with it? This is huge. You are a step ahead of everybody else. So you figure out what would make the ending satisfying. Also, yes, make the protagonists intersect. You may have to take some plot points that you planned on releasing in book two and put them in book one. Yes, it's hard, and it's gonna suck, probably, because you have this dream of your trilogy in your head. However, as you said, you can't sell book one if your protagonists never intersect. Unless you're George Martin, you can wait, like, 5 books to make it happen, but he's got a bit of a track record, so that made it okay. When I was about to write book two of The Shambling Guides, I had planned on doing a Boston book. It was going to be featuring heavily The Big Dig and why it took so long to finish it. It did have something to do with a rat demon queen living underneath Boston. And I had, like, the emotional beats planned out, and I knew what was going to happen to lead up to book three, And my publisher said, you know what? We're not interested in Boston. You have to choose a different city. And since the plot points I had involving Boston needed to be in Boston, I had to rethink. So I took my plans for book three and said, do you want a book about New Orleans? And they said, sure. So I had to figure out how to take what I wanted to do in book three and see if I can fit it into a book two. And yeah, I was pissed off. But I did it. So I think you can do it. Now granted, it has been many months and you've probably made your decision and gone on ahead. And for that, I respect you. And if you've trunked it, that's cool too. But I'm saying you don't have to put it away and you don't have to work on it for 1,000 years. I think you can fix this because you know what the problems are. Anonymous writes, how do you handle jealousy in a professional manner when it deals with members of your own family? I've been writing and submitting stories to a specific market. They've all been rejected. I'm learning from the experiences, but recently my partner has started submitting to the same markets as I do, and that work is getting accepted. I support them, want them to succeed, but how do I handle myself without upsetting them or being disrespectful? How can I not become discouraged in my own writing after all this time? This is where you have to remember that your career is unlike anybody else's. We get jealous all the frickin' time. I was talking to an author the other day, and she told me an assignment that she'd gotten, and my first thought was, I am so jealous, that sounds so awesome. And my husband very gently reminded me what I'm working on this year. And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm working on something pretty cool, so I should probably focus on that. Now granted, that's easy, because he's telling me to stop being jealous of somebody else and focus on the thing that I had that was cool. But you have the other problem, which is somebody else has something awesome and you don't. So you really have to focus on the two careers separately. When you're talking about your partner's career, don't bring up your own failures. Talk about your partner's career in the terms of their career. When you're talking about your career, don't compare it to your partner's. Don't be like, I wish it was more like you. I wish the editor would respond to me more like you. It's very difficult when you're both doing the same thing to keep it separate. But just remember who you're talking about when you talk. You have every right to be frustrated and discouraged. That is how writers are when we're rejected. It is 100% natural. And I'm glad that you say you're happy for your partner, but the key thing here is to keep them separated. And if you worry about communicating with your partner, tell them that. Tell them, you know, I'm going to make an effort because I'm very happy for you, but I'm still frustrated with my own career. So when we talk about you, we're talking about you, and it's great. And we're talking about my frustrations, we're talking about me. And that way you can try to keep them separated. I am giving this advice having not been in your situation with my partner. I've often wondered how people can marry other writers because of this. Also, health insurance. If I get somebody like Stephen Gould or Elizabeth Baer or Scott Lynch, those two come to mind. Stephen Gould is married to Laura Mixon. They're both writers. And Elizabeth Baer and Scott Lynch are married. So if I get them on, I will ask that question because it's not something I've dealt with personally. But, you know, I have lots of friends who are writers and I have lots of friends who have different levels of success than I do. And there are times when I feel bad when we're talking about their success and I put in my whatever angst I'm having about my career because I know the conversation is about them. And when we're talking about my frustrations, we usually don't touch on their success. Oh, and my biggest piece of advice that has nothing to do with what you asked for is don't quit. Don't quit because they're doing well and you're not. Your path is going to be different. Please don't quit. Vin wants to know my thoughts on self-publishing because I've mentioned in a previous episode that I had some series planned and my publisher did not want to continue with them. I don't mind self-publishing at all. I think it's great. I hybrid publish myself. I have several books available on ebook that I self-published that I originally put out in audio form several years ago, and they never sold, so I self-published it because they had a following. The problem with continuing the Shambling Guides or writing a sequel to Six Wakes is, in one hand, you have a plan to write a book, and that's it. Knowing that you have to write the book, rewrite it, edit it, get a cover, get a layout, and then publish it yourself. In the other hand, I have a contract for a book that will promise me X amount of dollars. It's giving me Y amount of dollars up front. Which one do I do? I mean, it's obvious. If I have an outstanding contract, I'm going to focus on that because A, it's a contract, and B, it's guaranteed money. Self-publishing is a big risk, and I'm not unwilling to take that risk. But if I have a sure thing over here, then I'm not going to put forth a whole bunch of effort to do the self-publishing thing. I may be doing serialized stuff on my Patreon, but I'm having trouble balancing that storytelling with said contract over here. I love audio because I'm pointing all different ways in my room and you can't see any of them. Sorry. So yeah, I mean, I would love to continue the Shambling Guides. I have several cities in mind. I have a 7-book plot arc in mind. I would love to write a sequel to Six Wakes. I have a number of ideas as well, but they are backburnered while I have other jobs that are definitely going to pay me. That's why I make those decisions. We're up to August now. Eric writes, how do you decide when something is good enough? Eric, I'm going to have to give you that vague, infuriating answer, which is, you learn by experience. You know, if you read it and you think, if you have any thoughts like, oh, the reader's going to just understand that, maybe not. If you go through and you clean up all of the text, including passive voice, adverbs, weak words like saw and heard and felt, and your story has a beginning, middle, and end, and I know that sounds simple, but I promote this book frequently on the podcast, Nancy Kress's Beginnings, Middles, and Ends, where she talks about each aspect of the book and what it's supposed to contain. It's a fantastic book. If you have all of that, then say it's good enough and send it out. As you keep writing, you'll learn. One really infuriating thing I've learned about writing is that you can't say, I learned how to do this thing. I finally got symbolism down. Oh, I understand foreshadowing now. It's a very gradual thing. I can tell you I learned a lot in grad school, but I can't point to any one lesson that changed the way I write. I just know that I learned a lot, I wrote a lot, and I'm better now. So that's where experience comes in. You have to keep writing, and then you will learn, you'll start to learn when's enough. I'll be honest. I'm embarrassed to say this, but I'll be honest. I really wanted to get a proposal to my agent, and I knew it was a little weak in areas, and I sent it anyway. And of course, whatever comments was, these things don't work. So I knew it wasn't good enough, and I sent it anyway, and now I feel stupid. But, you know, she pointed out some other things that I didn't know, so now when I fix the stupid stuff, I can fix the other things as well. Cecilia says after several years, she started writing again and been getting a lot from the constant feedback she gets by posting at Wattpad.com, chapter by chapter. I like that you can post and post and post and don't have to care too much about editing to get actual feedback, which helps so much with the writing. The question is it a good idea to post a chapter, a story chapter by unedited chapter to get inspiration to finish something if I possibly want to edit that same story in the future with the intent of trying to get it published? The simple answer is, while you're still working on the writing craft, it's great to use Wattpad. If you're worried about somebody considering the work on Wattpad published, which some people may do, I know short story editors who will consider Patreon stories as reprints, instead of originals, even if it was only sent to a handful of people on Patreon. But what you do is you make a friend. If somebody's giving you really good feedback, say, you know, I want to work on something more privately, can I just send you chapters? Or you can join a group like Critters, which is specifically for workshopping books, and you have to log in. I think you have to pay for it. That's crittersgut.org. If you search for Critters, of course you get the movie. So this is embarrassing. I've been suggesting Critters to people who don't write science fiction, fantasy, and horror because the online writer's workshop focuses on science fiction, fantasy, and horror. And I just read that Critters focuses on those three genres. So if you ever went to Critters wanting to write something other than those genres and got disappointed because of me, I'm sorry. But if you search for romance writing workshops, you will find a whole bunch. Romance Writers of America keep doing it. The writersonlineworkshops.com have a lot of courses. So that way you can get the feedback you want, but you won't be giving up your first print rights. Hey, did you know that I Should Be Writing has a sponsor now? I Should Be Writing is supported by Cereal Box. It's called The HBO of Reading by National Public Radio. Cereal Box brings you gripping stories written by best-selling and award-winning teams of writers with new episodes every week. They're the addictive new shows you can read or listen to. The Cereal Box app lets you switch from listening to reading with a click. So join the plot with Cereal Box. Right now, I Should Be Writing listeners can get 20% off of any first season of a Cereal Box series. Head over to CerealBox.com and enter the promo code WRITING18. 18 are numerals. That's CerialBox.com, and the code is WRITING18. And you know, I write for Cereal Box, so I really, really want you to go over there and check it out. I wrote on BookBurners. I've been there since season one, and it is, I think it's pretty awesome. So that's just me. But if you like YA, they've got something for you. If you like romance, they've got something for you. If you like spy, they got something for you. If you like geek girls, I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff over there. So check it out. From September, Carenza writes, I finished my most polished book. Ready to send it out. I've queried a couple of agents, but I've had suggestions not to do more than four or five at a time to see if anyone suggests changes to make before I send out more. It seems like it would take a lot longer to get your novel out there, but I suppose I should be patient. Guess more than anything, I'm feeling discouraged. Do you have any advice on how to be patient? Well, first, email a question to somebody and have them wait several months to answer it. So, you're welcome. Second, you're going to have to learn to wait. You're just going to. This is your first step in waiting. It sucks. Because it takes so long to write the book, and when you're finally ready to send it out, you think now things are going to start happening, but it takes forever on the agent's side, and then the agent probably wants edits if you're signed. Sometimes the agents don't even want edits, or they suggest edits and maybe you can submit to them again, so then you have to edit it and send it out again, and then they'll take care of it on their own time, and then they'll decide to send it out to publishers, and publishers will sit on it. And then if you get a deal, your book won't come out for about 18 months. So you are doing the absolute best thing right now, which is focusing on another project. Of course, by now you've probably finished that other project. But it's a good question, and I felt we should talk about it. Aside from the fact that you really want a lot of projects out there, I mean, if you want to make a living as a writer, a good backlist is the way to do it. Because royalties and foreign rights and little checks here and there really add up much more than the, you know, advance you get. So, yes, be working on something else. An agent may like it but not think it's right but want to see something else from you. There's a lot of waiting. You just have to accept it. Bailey writes, how do you know you have a novel-length idea versus a novella or a short story? started to plan out my book, but I'm not sure I have enough for a novel. Well, I'll go with the metaphorical example first. Someone once told me that a novel was like a 7-course meal, and a short story was like a perfect piece of cake. You think about everything that goes into a glamorous seven-course meal. It's a lot of preparation. You have to make sure all the tastes complement each other. Everything works together. You got to have it done on time. It can't be too much or too little. And with the cake, you just have to focus on this one exquisite thing. Another metaphor is, if you're looking out a big bay window and you see a panoramic view of a countryside with a little town in the background, and you can see storm clouds, and maybe it's snowing, that's a novel. If you close the blinds, and you peek through the blinds, and you see a tree covered in snow, but you're looking at the same view, but because of your limited scope, you can only see that tree, that's a short story. Now, in a more concrete answer, there are some basic rules that go with short stories and novels, and the pros can break them. Of course they can, but as a beginner, you should not. I mean, if you're Jack London, you can do The Call of the Wild, which is mostly about a dog. But really, if you have more than 5 characters, typically you want a longer story. If you have a small number of characters, it's a shorter story. To continue the Jack London theme, that would be To Start a Fire, which is about a guy. Novels often have A plots and B plots and possibly C plots. You've got whatever's going on, the action in the story. You've got a personal conflict going on within the protagonist. Then you've got a B plot, which could be a romance, or if it's a romance, you probably have a B plot of a friendship or a family relationship or something to do with the protagonist's career. So a novel has a lot of layers, and short stories, while they do have beginnings, middles, and ends, they don't have as many layers. There's just not room for it. So if you feel that you want your work to be a novel, but there's not enough there, figure out what other characters you could put in. Ask yourself what's happening in the character's personal lives. You didn't say what genre it is, but oftentimes, you know, people don't love Tyrion Lannister because he is a dwarf who's hated by his family, but is in a great position of power. They love him because he's resourceful and he's got major insecurities, but he's brilliant. And they love the fact that he was pretty much into women and wine for a very long time until he had to grow up. Those are all many facets that George R. R. Martin has written thousands of words about. Same with Daenerys. Sure, she's the Queen of the Dragons, very powerful, but she's also a teenager, and she also gets crushes, and she's also a widow, and she was also heavily abused by her brother growing up. So backstories, relationships, more characters, more conflict will flesh out your novel. Bailey also had a question about blogs. I was listening to one of your podcasts today, and you mentioned something about a published blog. What is the difference between a published and an unpublished blog, and what should I have? I am not entirely sure what you're referring to. If you're talking about published, that means that the world can see it. And if it's unpublished, it's still like in draft form on your computer. If you're talking about publishing blog, it's usually blogs that talk about publishing, such as Christine Catherine Rush or Nathan Bransford. And usually it's publishing professionals who have publishing blogs. So I'm sorry if I was confusing, but that's the only answer I can think of to give you. Hooray, we're up to October! You brought up the book From a Different Point of View, which is the Star Wars anthology I was part of. One thing I love about anthologies is I can take it in bite-sized chunks. I can read a single story or binge several in a sitting, then set it aside for a while. What are your feelings on anthologies? Are they more common or accessible than a decade or more ago? Is the form more important now than ever before? Can anthologies do things to tell stories that other forms cannot? I don't think anthologies are any different now than ever before. Anthologies have been going on for years and years and years. I have an anthology edited by Isaac Asimov and Marty Greenberg called The Science Fiction Weight Loss Diet, which has science fiction stories about weight loss. And it's it includes Quitters Incorporated by Stephen King and a Heinlein story that I thought was really fascinating. But that's from the 70s, obviously. So anthologies are still happening. I don't think they're much different than they were, but what anthologies can do that other things can't do is, like A Different Point of View, it tells one big story, a story you're already familiar with, but it tells one big story from the points of view of minor characters in that movie. But it's all one theme. Good anthologies will focus on a theme and bring you several different angles. Mackenzie writes, part of what draws readers into a story is the intriguing questions it presents, but I often get feedback that implies these questions are a sign of too little explanation. How do I respond when some readers say I'm not explaining enough and others say I'm explaining too much? How do I know when I'm getting it wrong and when the reader simply doesn't like the learning curve I've chosen? Like I said before, this is one of those irritating things that experience has to show you. What I've learned when it comes to feedback is if several people give you the same feedback, you should probably pay attention. If one person gives you the same feedback and you don't want to listen, that's your call. It's probably a safe bet. You know, if one person says it, it's an opinion, but if a bunch of people say it, then it's getting closer to fact. So if a whole bunch of people say this thing is way too unclear, you should clear it up. But if one person says they didn't get it, well, there are going to be people all over who don't get what you write. And same for too much explanation. If you need to make something a little bit more vague, then take your comments and see how many people have made the same ones. And that's it. Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry I sat on those for so long. If you're not put off by this episode and you want to send me feedback, you can do so at mightymur@gmail.com. Just please put ISBW in the subject line because I have two podcasts. My other podcast is Ditch Diggers, and we take feedback there too. If you have a question about the business of writing, you can ask Ditch Diggers. You can find out more about Ditch Diggers also at murverse.com. If you want to support the podcast and the transcriptions that I put out, you can do so at patreon.com/mightymur. Supporting the podcast will get you early posting of podcasts and transcriptions and a variety of other awesome things. And remember, you can get the book I should be writing at most bookstores, and the ebook is now available. So if you like the kind of thing I do here, I do it in a book too. And that has, the print version has blank pages and a bunch of writing prompts. So thanks for putting up with me, and thanks for listening. You should be writing. Hey, one thing I forgot to say is I will be attending NorwestCon this coming weekend to attend the Philip K. Dick Award ceremonies, because my book, 6 Wakes, is nominated for the Philip K. Dick Award. Yee! But if you're going to be at NorwestCon, let me know. I love meeting listeners. Remember, you can support the show at patreon.com/mightymur. I should be writing theme music provided by John Anilio. You can find more about him at johnanilio.com. This podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license. But I should be writing. I should be working on my craft. Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first 3 audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.